With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you guys about betonline.ag. Welcome to the madness in March, everybody. 4 weeks of college basketball fever. On the men's side, your favorites to win are Houston, defending champion UConn, Purdue, who's choked each of the last 3 years, so many options on the table. On the epic women's side of the bracket, Iowa's your betting favorite. South Carolina's the undefeated champion. The big three of Angel Reese, Haley Van Lith, and Morrow at LSU. Juju Watkins and USC. Tara Vanderveer's Stanford team. So many teams on the table. And if you want to bet on any and all of them, Bet Online Sportsbook has you covered before the big dance. Use our promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to pick up a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the link in the description to this episode. Click on that link in the description to this episode. Bet online, where the game starts. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, or good night, however and whenever it is you may be listening. Thank you for stopping on into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy podcast, live on the Believe Podcast Network, except it isn't live because it is, as always, a podcast. And podcasts aren't live. It's the whole purpose of this podcast thing. You can listen however and whenever it is that you so choose, and we appreciate that you have decided to stop in however and whenever it is you may be listening. It's the NFL Free Agency Show. We've been teasing it for 2 days. We talked about it with our friend Razor Rosenthal after the Falcons signed Kirk Cousins and the Pittsburgh Steelers signed Russell Wilson and a bunch of other smaller moves came in through the door. But NFL free agency is now basically over. I mean, I'm looking at the list of people who's available and like, yeah, you could go get yourself in a Rick Armstead, the former defensive tackle for the San Francisco 49ers, but for the most part, pretty much every free agent that hit the board that was meaningful is off the board right now. And the most interesting takeaway of the whole ordeal is that the longest commitment any player got from any team in free agency was Jake Elliott getting a 4-year contract extension to be the kicker for the Philadelphia Eagles. That is the most, out of all the contracts I've seen, that is the most long-term solidified commitment any team made to any player. Jake Elliott's 4-year, $24 million deal is like a legit 4-year deal. Yes, it's a kicker contract and it's not a ton of money to cut, but it's like the most steadfast contract anyone got. Because what I saw during free agency this year, a ton of 1-year deals and a ton of 1-year deals where players are not really getting the market value I thought they would have gotten in a year where the dollar value goes up across the league. And secondarily, adding on to the fact, the people who did get 3-4 year contracts, those 3 or 4 year contracts are really 1 to 2 year long contracts. There were very, very few long-term commitments at all in free agency this year, which is really, really interesting given how many players it feels like are switching teams and how many players it feels like would be instrumental to some of the teams that they committed to. Like, even Baker Mayfield only got a 3-year, $100 million extension. Chris Jones got a 5-year contract with Kansas City, but all the money is guaranteed within the first 3 years. So it's basically a 3-year, fully guaranteed $95 million deal, and then they will either reevaluate or Chris Jones will get traded. He'll either get extended in 3 years by Kansas City, or Kansas City and him will part ways because there's no way he's going to play without the guaranteed money going into year 4 of that contract. It's just the nature of the deals that they signed. But yeah, of all the players who signed deals, like, nobody really got a long-term commitment. Even Kirk Cousins, and I know he's the biggest name that switched teams, and I know we'll probably talk about Kirk Cousins, the football impact at some point down the road when we talk about mock drafts or have one of our friends of the show on. But I do want to talk about Kirk Cousins as a microcosm of this entire free agency and why so few people signed 3- and 4-year long commitments with the teams and the power that the ownership has in collective bargaining. I'll talk about Kirk Cousins in a second as a macro version, but in the micro, Kirk Cousins' 4-year contract is really a 2-year contract, very similar to what Derek Carr signed last year with the New Orleans Saints, because you saw 4 years, $150 million for Derek Carr and thought, wow, that's a crazy contract for someone who, after 9 years of being in quarterback purgatory with the Raiders, was immediately jumping over to a Saints team that we think of as being a well-run organization. And then you look at the contract details and it's really a 2-year contract with Derek Carr because all the guarantees are structured within the first 2 years. And when the Saints inevitably start 3-5 this year, they will bench Derek Carr, they'll fire Dennis Allen, and then they'll go move on and draft a quarterback or sign a quarterback or just do a stopgap option after trying 2 years of Derek Carr and Dennis Allen tying his future to Derek Carr. Which, by the way, they signed Willie Gay, which was interesting because I thought Willie Gay was going to retire at the end of last season with Kansas City, but one more 1-year deal for Willie Gay to go play for the New Orleans Saints. I want to bring it back to Kirk Cousins now real quick, because Kirk Cousins' 4-year contract, which is really a 2-year contract to join Atlanta, at the same time that Baker Mayfield signs a 3-year contract with Tampa for less money than Kirk Cousins was, but it's still Baker Mayfield getting that big payday that he had been trying to get for 6 years now. We think back to the first 4 years of his career with Cleveland, last year or 2 years ago being a revolving door of backup for the Panthers and then going to the Rams and doing not a whole lot with the Rams, to then this year the 1-year stopgap with the Bucks. Juju Talk Sports and I doing a whole podcast about Baker Mayfield reinventing himself and what happens when you are the person who puts not just a chip on your shoulder, but a boulder on your shoulder, and at what point when the haters are proven right do you have to reinvent yourself. And Baker Mayfield said fuck you to the haters one more time and got himself $100 million from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I thought the Falcons and Bucks signing the quarterbacks that they did was very interesting. And all these teams that signed the revolving door of running backs, whether it was Derrick Henry going to Baltimore, Saquon Barkley going to the Eagles, and then the Eagles' former running back DeAndre Swift goes to the Bears, and then the Bears' former running back goes somewhere else, and then Josh Jacobs ends up going to the Packers on a 4-year deal, and then they cut Aaron Jones, and Aaron Jones goes to replace Alexander Mattison, and all the revolving door of running backs who no one really got longer than a 2-year commitment except for Saquon Barkley. Nobody got a long-term deal from any of these teams. And the thing that I thought was so interesting about that and the Kirk Cousins signing, and particularly around Kirk Cousins, is this. The value of being very good in the NFL is different than it used to be. And I don't think people quite understand what the value of being very good is in the NFL anymore. Kirk Cousins, by the time this contract will expire with the Falcons, will have made, at a bare minimum, $100 million over 2 years. Because $100 million of that deal was guaranteed, 90% of it is in the first 2 years. If they trade him or cut him after 2 years, he'll take his extra $10 million to go play somewhere else. But he's going to get $100 million guaranteed from the Atlanta Falcons, which guarantees Kirk Cousins $333 million over his NFL career. the equivalent of a third of a billion dollars. I shouldn't say trillion. A third of $1 billion over Kirk Cousins' career. We all agree that Kirk Cousins is not quite quarterback purgatory of Ryan Tannehill and Derek Carr. But every year for the last 4 years of this podcast, we've made the same joke, which is that the Vikings give Kirk Cousins a 1 year contract extension to get themselves out of salary cap hell, and then they just kick the dollars down the curb until eventually they let Kirk Cousins walk for free and they get a compensatory pick and all that dead salary cap space goes off their books. They just kept kicking the bill down the road until Kirk Cousins would inevitably leave in free agency. And they spent 6 years doing that. When they first signed Kirk Cousins after he left Washington, it was 3 years, $84 million fully guaranteed, the most guaranteed money any quarterback had ever gotten in a deal. This was back in 2018. Kirk Cousins got $84 million fully guaranteed, the first ever fully guaranteed contract the NFL had ever given out. And then I think Cam Newton was trying to get a fully guaranteed deal, and he got way more than Kirk Cousins got, but I think it was only like 80% of it was guaranteed instead of the full 100% of the deal. But I remember Kirk Cousins at that time got the contract that he did because the Vikings had just gone to the NFC Championship game with a revolving door of quarterbacks. And they made a giant financial commitment to Kirk Cousins that ultimately led to them not bringing back Stephon Diggs a few years later. Or I guess that would be 2 years later. 2 years later, they decided we would rather have very good quarterback than Stephon Diggs. And ultimately, they got Justin Jefferson out of it. And then 2 years later, Adam Thielen went out the door and they replaced Adam Thielen with Jordan Addison. And they just kept replacing the receivers around Kirk Cousins for about 6 years. And the Vikings, every single year that Kirk Cousins was there, won between 7 and 10 games. And every single year Kirk Cousins was the starter with the Washington football team, they won between 7 and 10 games. Kirk Cousins, every year of his career, has won somewhere between 7 games when the team has played bad and injuries happen, and 10 games under the best of circumstances, the best of which came when they went 9-7 in 2019, and then beat the 13-3 Saints on the road in the only playoff game Kirk Cousins has ever won in his career. For winning between 7 to 10 games, Kirk Cousins has made a third of $1 trillion, which I believe makes him, or sorry, why do I keep saying a trillion? A third of $1 billion over the lifespan of his NFL career. And I think this is super interesting because while Kirk Cousins has made about, I think he's top 12 in terms of highest paid players of the last decade in the NFL, while Kirk Cousins has made like top of the league money while not being what we regard as a top of the league type of player, Kirk Cousins is probably underpaid. Given the salary cap structures of the NFL, everyone is underpaid. Therefore, if you're following the philosophy logic, if salary caps make it such that every player in the NFL is not open to a free and open market, and therefore their value is being limited by percentages of the cap, if you believe in that philosophy that because of the salary cap, every player in the NFL is underpaid, therefore Kirk Cousins is probably also underpaid, despite the fact that he has beaten the system better than any quarterback or any player relative to their talent, I would argue, in the NFL. Kirk Cousins making $336 million to every single year of his career win between 7 and 10 games, except for the 1 year when the Vikings won 13 games, and we all knew that the Vikings were bullshit. Because, what was that, 2022? They went like 10-1 in one score games. Justin Jefferson had that one-handed catch against the Bills, and then Josh Allen fumbled at the goal line. The Colts with Matt Ryan blew a 36-point lead. We all knew that the Vikings were bullshit the 1 year that Kirk Cousins won more than 7 to 10 games. If you averaged out the one score games and said they were 7-4 instead of 10-1 in one score games, then even if they were above average in one score games, that would have been a 10-win team, which is the best Kirk Cousins has performed at any point in his career. A team led by Kirk Cousins. And Kirk Cousins has consistently been between quarterback 6 and quarterback 18 in QBR rankings every year of his career. In fact, I should probably have the QBR rankings back to back to back here just to see where Kirk Cousins stands every year that he was with the Minnesota Vikings. But I bring this up to say Kirk Cousins is exploiting the system of very good. And what I mean by the system of very good is this. Remember, like, 7 to 10 years ago when everybody said that the NFL is the league of parity? Like, people said for years, the NFL is a league of parity. Anyone had a chance to win any given year. There was always worst to first teams, all sorts of stuff like that. People were very adamant that the NFL was a worst to first kind of league. Also, Kirk Cousins' QBR stats. In his first year with the Vikings, he finished 14th. The next year, he finished 13th. In 2020, he finished... Where are you, Kirk Cousins? He was... 18. He was 18 in 2020. In 2021, Kirk Cousins was 15. In 2022, Kirk Cousins was 23 in QBR, the year that he had the best record of any team he's ever had. And then last year doesn't really count because he didn't qualify with enough games to make it on the QBR list. But I bring all of this up to say that Kirk Cousins, who has never finished higher than, 13th in QBR at any point of his NFL career, Kirk Cousins has made $250 million and beaten the system better than any quarterback in the league, I would argue. And the system of very good is this. What is the value of being very good in the modern NFL when you know that you are one of the teams that will not be elite? Because we used to say the NFL was a league of parity. One of my favorite stats of all time is that the NFC, between 2006 and 2021, they held 15 seasons, 12 different franchises made it to the Super Bowl. In 15 years, 12 different NFC franchises made it to the Super Bowl, and two of those, one of the double-up teams was the 49ers, who made it in 2012 and 2019, with two completely different teams. The only player, coach, or executive who was a holdover from the first Super Bowl run to the second was Joe Staley. The only person. They went to the Super Bowl with two completely separate teams. So in essence, 13 different teams made it to the Super Bowl within 15 years in the NFC. And we used to talk for years, worst to first, I think 18 of 20 years to begin the 2000s, a team who finished worst in their division the year before became first the following year. I'm guessing that stat probably started when they moved to 8 divisions of 4 in 2002. But like 18 out of 20 years, a team that was dead last the year before became first place the following year. And because of the playoff structure that gave you an automatic playoff game at home if you won your division, you had a better chance of advancing further in the playoffs. It used to always be NFL's the league of parity, league of parity, league of parity. And that is just simply not the case in the modern NFL. It just simply is not the case. Because there has been a drastic, drastic change in the competence levels of the best organizations. And I would argue with all the rule changes in the sport, the value of the quarterback has gone up so much that if you have one of those star quarterbacks, you're gonna be consistently great. I bring this up to say this. In the AFC over the past 20, since Tom Brady went to his first Super Bowl, so that would have been 23 years ago. The only quarterbacks that have ever played in the Super Bowl from the AFC are Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Patrick Mahomes, 1 year of Flacco, 1 year of Burrow, and 1 year of Rich Gannon. Over 24 years, 21 of your Super Bowls have had one of four quarterbacks in it. It's either been Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, or Patrick Mahomes. That's, if my math is correct, 87% of your AFC champions over the past 24 years. I also bring up this point, too. Either Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes have played in the AFC Championship game every year since 2010. 13 consecutive seasons have ended in the AFC with either Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes playing at least one of the two spots in the AFC Championship game. There was the 1 year where they played each other. But basically, 50% of your AFC Championship finalists, which I would regard as a great team, is one of the 4 to 6 teams capable of making it to a conference championship. For 13 years, there's been two teams that have run the AFC. It is New England and Kansas City are guaranteed to be in the championship at the end. Those organizations are just far and away ahead of everyone else because it is a 100% certainty for the last 13 years that 50% of your conference championships, 50% of the teams who play in your conference championship will be either the Patriots or Kansas City. It was the Patriots. They transitioned to Kansas City pretty seamlessly, handed off the baton in 2018, and Kansas City's run with it for the last 6 years. You had 8 years of New England dominance, 6 years of Kansas City back-to-back in terms of making it to the AFC Championship game. That's not a statistical anomaly. That's breaking down the parity that used to exist in the sport. You go to the NFC, where I brought up the stat earlier that 13 different teams essentially made it to the Super Bowl within 15 years. If my math is correct, it went 41 Bears, 42 Giants, 43 Cardinals, 44 Saints, 45 Packers, 46 second Giants, so that's a double up, 47 49ers, 48 Seahawks, 49 Seahawks, that was kind of the back-to-back year with the Legion of Boom, 50 Panthers, that's a new team, 51 Falcons, new team, 52 Eagles, new team, 53 Rams, new team, 54 49ers, but it was a completely different 49ers team than the one that went to 47, and then 55 was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, first time they went in the cycle. So 12 different organizations made the Super Bowl in 15 years. Since Kirk Cousins signed his contract with the Minnesota Vikings, there's basically only been three good teams in the NFC. It is Eagles went to two Super Bowls. They won the one in Super Bowl 52. They lost a couple years ago. The Eagles went to two Super Bowls, 1-1. Rams went to two Super Bowls, 1-1. 49ers went to two Super Bowls, lost them both. And then the 1 year that Tom Brady went to the Super Bowl with Tampa Bay. So 6 of your last 7 NFC champions have been one of three teams, the Rams, the Eagles, and the 49ers. And if I asked you across the board who are the best run organizations in the NFC, you would say, in some order, Rams, Eagles, 49ers, and maybe weave in the Packers. Maybe you view the Packers ahead of some of these other teams, but it's not crazy to say that the Eagles have found competitive advantages where others have not. The 49ers have built this team that is as good as the Legion of Boom Seahawks. Like, there has been no greater collection of talent over the last 15 years in the NFL than the San Francisco 49ers of this current regime. They just don't have a quarterback as good as some of these other teams, but that's neither here nor there. By the way, if you want to expand this out beyond making it to the Super Bowl, every single conference championship game over the last 7 years in the NFC has had either Philadelphia, San Francisco. Or I'm sorry, over the last 7 years, so we're going 14 seasons here, or 14 teams. 7 seasons, 14 teams have made it to the conference championship. If my math is correct, I believe that 8 of the 14 teams that have played in a conference championship game over the last 7 years, because again, it's 7 years, 2 teams make the conference championship, 8 of the 14 have been either Philadelphia, San Francisco, or the Rams. And if you want to expand it out to the Packers, who obviously didn't make a Super Bowl but have been a very well-run team, the Packers also have 2 to their name between the 2019 season and the 2020 season. Because you had Eagles in 17, you had the Rams and the Saints in 2018, you had the Niners and Packers in 19, you had the Packers and Bucks in 20, you had the Rams play the 49ers in 21, you had the Eagles play the 49ers in 22, and then this last year you had Detroit versus San Francisco. But oh, by the way, which team was closer to beating San Francisco? Was it Detroit or was it Green Bay? There are basically 4 good organizations in the NFC. There are basically 4 good organizations in the AFC. It's Kansas City, it's Baltimore, and then you can have some debates about Buffalo and Cincinnati, because Cincinnati has made a Super Bowl. I won't discredit Cincinnati that far, even though they are run very poorly as an organization. But I bring all this up to say the NFL is no longer a league of parity. So what is the value you put on very good when your team has virtually no chance of being great? Like, is there anything the Falcons can do over the next 3 to 4 years that will make them as good as San Francisco? Good enough to beat San Francisco in a playoff game? And even if you say, well, they could do this, this, and this, what could the Eagles do over the next 3 years that would make them better than both San Francisco and Philadelphia? Let's put it out that way. Is there anything that they could do to beat both? Let's call it 2 of the 3, actually, because I know Philadelphia is down a little bit right now, but Philadelphia is going to be good next year. Trust me. With Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio, great hires. They're bringing in some help on the defensive side of the ball. Saquon Barkley is going to be awesome. Trust me. The Eagles are going to be back to being great next year. What are the odds that the Falcons are going to be able to beat 2 of those teams in the playoffs? Because Tampa did beat the Eagles last year. But what are the chances that the Falcons are going to get good enough, could do anything over the next 3 years to become better than San Francisco, Philadelphia, and the Rams, 2 of those 3 teams? Because I would argue if you drop C.J. Stroud on the Philadelphia Eagles, right, or if you drop C.J. Stroud on the Atlanta Falcons right now, I don't think that Falcons team is going to be better than the 49ers, Eagles, and Rams. I don't think they're that close to these teams. These well-run organizations better at finding value within the margins. And I'll even throw the Packers in this mix too, because the Packers, even though they haven't been to a Super Bowl in the last 7 years, they've been consistently great with multiple different iterations of that team. I thought the Packers were going to be the most 7-10 team of all last year, and they came out and kicked ass in the back half of the season. I was wrong about the Packers. I made jokes at the Packers' expense because I thought that they were dumb for moving on from Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, and they got back to basically the exact same spot within 1 year. Took them 1 year to get right back to where they were with Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. Even though they didn't win 13 regular season games, even if they had to backdoor their way into the playoffs, they beat a team that won 13 games in the regular season. So, like, give them all the props in the world. Give the Rams all the props in the world, because the Rams were one play away from beating the Lions. And if they had beaten the Lions in that playoff game, they might have ended up going to the NFC Championship just like the Lions, because they would have had Detroit in the next, or they would have played Tampa in the next round of the playoffs, and they would have beaten Tampa in that second round of the playoffs. So, like, the Rams were one play away from the NFC Championship game, too. I don't want to discredit what the Rams are doing, because the Rams, again, like, they went F them picks all in, and then 1 year later, they have a young team that's ready to compete for a championship again. It's crazy how fast the Rams and the Packers turn those things around. But there's basically nothing that the Falcons can do that will make them as good as those teams. I've said this point with the Raiders too, and it's interesting the decision the Raiders made, because they signed Gardner Minshew, and maybe they're still looking to draft a quarterback here at some point, but they gave Gardner Minshew like eight figures, like more than $10 million a year on a two-year contract that's really a one-year contract, but is also a two-year contract. The Raiders, I hypothesize, and I brought this up when they signed Jimmy G last year instead of going after Lamar Jackson, and now they've signed Gardner Minshew instead of trying to trade for Justin Fields. And I don't want to say they're not going to trade for Justin Fields, because they still might trade for Justin Fields, or they might try and go up in the draft or do something like that. But I bring up this point with the Raiders. The Raiders could make as many good moves as they wanted. They could start a rebuild, find an ex Justin Jefferson. They could find a franchise quarterback. No amount of moves over the next 4 to 5 years will make it possible for the Raiders to catch Kansas City. The Raiders are just so far behind the pack that even if they hit on first-round draft pick after first-round draft pick, even if they found value in the later rounds in the same way that the Rams did, I genuinely don't think there is anything the Raiders can do over the next 4 years to catch Kansas City. They are playing for best case scenario wild card. Like, it is literally impossible for them to catch Kansas City until Travis Kelce retires. Just genuinely impossible. No matter how many good moves, because the Raiders are just starting from so far behind the pack. Even last year when they went into the offseason, they had Renfro under contract. They had Waller under contract. They could have traded those players, and they did ultimately trade Waller for a compensatory third-round pick. But they could have had some of those value pieces in the in-between, and they did not make the upgrades necessary to... Now, they did not make the hard moves that would have put them in a better position financially. They said, we are running it back with Jimmy Garoppolo instead of Derek Carr, and thinking that was going to solve all their problems. And clearly, Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler were the wrong hires. But they made wrong hires when they brought in John Gruden and Mike Mayock, who fucked up every draft pick for 4 years, like just whiff after whiff after whiff in the first round. They whiffed on Cleveland Furl instead of Josh Allen. They whiffed on Henry Ruggs, obviously for different reasons that we've articulated before on the podcast. They whiffed on Damon Arnett, whiffed on Alex Leatherwood. All first round picks, all busts. And at a certain point, you just throw so much value down the drain that you just fall so far behind the eight ball. And the Raiders at this point, I still believe, because of just how much of a machine Kansas City has running, and the fact that Kansas City has turned the AFC West into the AFC East from the 2000s, there is literally, literally nothing the Raiders could do to be great. It is impossible. The Raiders are 4 years away from ever being great, ever competing for a chance to go to the AFC Championship game. So if you have no chance of being great, if you have no chance of catching these well-run organizations because you are just so far behind the eight ball in a league that does not have parity, even the idea of we could have a fluky result and fuck around and make it to an NFC championship game, you totally could. In the AFC for the last 3 years, some fluky team has made it to the second round of the playoffs, because there's only been three good teams at any given point in the AFC. It's been Kansas City, it's been Buffalo, and then either Cincinnati or Baltimore. It was either Cincinnati or Baltimore for the last 5 years. Since 2020, it has been either Kansas City, Buffalo, and one of the AFC North teams at the end of the season every year. Those are your three great teams in the AFC. Baltimore went down, Cincinnati went up. Now Cincinnati's down, Baltimore went up. But it's basically been those three teams. It's Kansas City, Buffalo, and Baltimore / Cincinnati. If you're not one of those teams, you do not have a chance to win the AFC. In the NFC, if you are not, Philadelphia, San Francisco, the Rams, and maybe the Packers, you have virtually no chance of winning the conference. Again, the AFC has had the same teams in the Super Bowl for 9 consecutive seasons. It has been either a Tom Brady-led Patriots team, a Patrick Mahomes-led Kansas City team, or Joe Burrow. And even that Joe Burrow game, they had to go to overtime in the AFC Championship game to beat Kansas City. There are basically only 6 or 7 teams that are allowed to be great in the NFL. And sure, the Titans fucked around and made the AFC Championship game in 2019. That can happen to you too. A fluky playoff win is still a playoff win. It's why I can't make the joke about welcoming the Giants to a second decade without a playoff win. They're in a decade of irrelevance, but they did win a fluky playoff game, and winning fluky playoff games are fine. The Jaguars with Trevor Lawrence won a fluky playoff game. Winning fluky playoff games is awesome. Tampa last year won a fluky playoff game. That's awesome. Good for you. Win fluky playoff games. That's the entire formula that the Falcons are following right now, which is, with some good luck, better quarterback play, we can win the division. And if we win the division, we can fuck around and win a playoff game. And if we fuck around and win a playoff game, good for us, because that's literally the best we can do. There is nothing the Falcons can do right now that will make them good enough to catch these other teams. And I think it's so interesting that teams in free agency have taken that strategy and bared it out with some of their free agent decisions. If you look at what Tampa did this year by bringing back Baker Mayfield, by bringing back Mike Evans, they made a commitment that we can repeat the success of last year. Even they don't believe they can build off of what they had last year. There's too many pieces that are going to be leaving the organization to build off of what they had last year. But they weren't ready to completely blow this whole thing up and start again, because the Panthers are going to suck this year, and the Saints are probably going to suck this year. I feel pretty confident saying the Saints are going to be pretty bad this year. And so the Bucs and the Falcons are both looking up and saying, we can get a home playoff game, and we can win a home playoff game. And that would be awesome if we win a home playoff game. And that gives us at least a one-game puncher's chance to beat a San Francisco, to beat a Philadelphia, or to beat a Los Angeles Rams team, or beat a Packer team. I don't want to disrespect the Packers. It's just y'all have lost so many goddamn heartbreaking games the last few years. You should have been in one of those Super Bowls. Just got to put it out there. The NFL is not a league of parity anymore. There's 6 teams that are good. I'm sorry, 6 teams that are great. There's 6 great teams over the past 7 years in the league. And those teams have gone through different iterations of their team and still found a way to be smarter and advance further in the playoffs than all of their counterparts. The Packers, the Rams, the 49ers, the Eagles, Kansas City, Buffalo, Baltimore, these are teams that have been the great teams and great organizations of the last 7 years in the NFL. And by the way, I will add, Cincinnati went from being the worst team in the league to the team that made the Super Bowl 2 years later in the first year that they had Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. And now the Bengals are seeing a little bit of a brain drain. And I think they're going to need some help in order to get back to the place that they were before. And I don't have the confidence that that organization is going to be able to pivot and develop players in the same way that Baltimore did the last few years. And they tried to make a few free agent signings. None of them really jumped off the page in terms of dramatic improvement. Maybe some of these draft picks that they'll hit on will help supplement some of these players, but the Bengals didn't really do a whole lot when free agency rolled around here. Let me see if I can find some of the moves that Cincinnati made. They assigned Davis Gaither today. They signed Gesicki to that 1-year deal. They traded Joe Mixon for Zach Moss, which, you know, is okay. you know, if you believe the running back's interchangeable, they're going to get a nice little value right there. They signed Geno Stone. They gave Drew Sample a contract, which kind of undermined the whole Gesicki thing. And Irv Smith Jr., their former tight end, went over to Kansas City and defected. So, I mean, the Bengals didn't really do a whole lot in free agency to address some of these dramatic concerns they have, but maybe their great improvement is going to be getting Joe Burrow back healthy. But I think it's just so interesting that these teams have kind of made the call that the value of very good is something that is being undervalued, especially in the modern NFL where you have such a little chance of being able to build an organization as strong as those six or seven teams that we've mentioned have built over really like half a decade, or in some cases 10 to 15 years. I mean, Howie Roseman has been in that job for like 12 years as the orchestrator of the Eagles. Andy Reid's been there for 12 years now, building up everything that that Kansas City machine has become. Maybe Buffalo's the example of one that might fall back to the pack, but Josh Allen is just such a unique physical talent that they are able to consistently make it to the second round of the playoffs year after year after year by virtue of having that player and having the offensive players that surround him. And oh, by the way, they're pivoting now, because I believe they are a relatively well-run organization with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, as much as we like making the Sean McDermott jokes. They're a relatively well-run organization that when the season starts next year is going to have the youngest offense in the NFL. And if they move on from Stephon Diggs, they might have an even younger offense that I know is going to be good because they finally fixed the fucking running game last year and James Cook was a goddamn Pro Bowler. So now Buffalo has evolved and adapted around their franchise quarterback, and they've made it to now four consecutive divisional rounds and one year made it to the AFC Championship game. Buffalo is in this incredibly unique position where they are consistently great, and the teams behind them don't have a puncher's chance of getting that far in the playoffs. We've seen Pittsburgh try, and they just don't have the talent to turn it around. And they've exploited the value of being very good. I mean, Mike Tomlin has taken bad teams and made them very good. They've gotten the 7th seed in the playoffs more times than I think every other team in the NFL combined at this point. I mean, they were the 7th seed in 2021. They're the 7th seed in 2023. I don't know if any other team has had multiple runs as the 7th seed in the AFC playoff. And I know it's only been around for a few years now, but man, Pittsburgh, they get bounced in the wild card all the time, but those teams that make it to the wild card round probably don't deserve to be there. So the value of very good is something that I think is underappreciated in the league, because none of these teams are able to be great. It's not a league of parity. There's six or seven great organizations over the last 6 or 7 years. Like I said, the last 13 years, it's been Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes in every single AFC championship game since Mark Sanchez played against Ben Roethlisberger in 2010. It's been either the Patriots or Kansas City in every single AFC championship game for the last 13 years. Brady handed the baton to Mahomes. Mahomes has ran with it for an equally impressive run of success to the second Patriots dynasty. And in the case of the NFC, seven different years have produced three teams that have been to the Super Bowl. Two for the Eagles, two for the Rams, two for the 49ers. So even in the conference that historically has had more parity than the AFC over the last 20 to 25 years, even that conference doesn't have the parity that you might expect. Because if you're not one of those three to four teams that we've been talking about all podcast, you don't really have much of a chance of making a deep playoff run. And you know what? Some of these teams have exploited that option. The Giants won a fluky playoff game 2 years ago. Awesome. Brian, it might not buy Brian Daboll any extra time to run that team, but they won a fluky playoff game in Daboll's first year. The Bucks won a fluky playoff game last year. Good for you guys. The Lions just made the NFC Championship game. The Lions went to the NFC Championship game last year. That's the model for trying to build some level of success. If you're trying to counter the Eagles, the Rams, the 49ers, and try and get at least close to a championship, yeah, Detroit's a pretty good model to do that. But that's Detroit is like the AFC equivalent to the Bang or the NFC equivalent to the Bengals. They are this exception, this anomaly that took 4 years to build up. And even they were the beneficiaries of some lucky breaks because they were one Cam Sutton play away to Cam Sutton deflecting a Puka Nacua pass. They were one Puka Nacua completion away from losing that wild card game. And that's what you're fighting for if you're the Falcons. It's just get us close enough to get that one play. That one play that if it goes our way, maybe just maybe we can get to the NFC Championship game. And that's what Kirk Cousins buys you. That maybe one play that gets you close enough. Because they have some elite players on that defense. AJ Terrell and Jesse Bates are awesome. Truly awesome defensive players. And on offense, we know about all the weapons. We've made the Arthur Smith jokes time and time again here on this podcast. Hell, we're going to make one more Arthur Smith joke when we close out this podcast by playing the We Didn't Start the Fire Atlanta Falcons parody song that we wrote years ago. Which maybe we should add Kirk Cousins to that parody song. But I bring it up to say, parity, not parody, parity in the NFL doesn't exist anymore. It is a six-team dominated league for the last 6 to 7 years, and the league is not changing any of the structures or systems that have put those teams in a position to succeed. A big part of it is just like those organizations are incredibly well-run and smarter than your organization. You can't luck your way into being great, except for the Bengals. The Bengals lucked their way into being great. But even they had to be like competent around the edges. Zach Taylor had to be good enough to not drive the whole thing off a fucking cliff. Like, even they were beneficiaries of some really good breaks, along with lucking their way into the greatest offense that college football has ever seen, and then being in a position to draft both Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase with their first two picks, and get T. Higgins with the first pick in the second round right after picking Joe Burrow. Yeah, they did. They lucked their ass into some of that success. But unless you think you're going to be that, that's one example in the last 5 years. Maybe the Lions are a second example, but even the Lions picked Jeff Okuda third overall in that draft. Like, even the Lions have some mess-ups on their hands. Like, the Bengals are the one exception, and unless you think you're going to be that lucky and that exceptional to fall ass backwards into Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, you're just, like, playing the odds of how can we get to very good. And very good has a value, and Kirk Cousins has, I don't want to say exploited, Kirk Cousins has used that value to his advantage. And I think now, after 6 years or 7 years of the same five teams kicking ass and taking names with multiple iterations of their team, everyone else is kind of getting wiser to the fact that they are not as smart as some of these other teams. And they're trying to get into that class of very good. Because if you're not great, people just think if you're not great, you should tank. It should be either you're very, very good or very, very bad, because tanking is the way that you get to be very, very good. And I will admit, Jacksonville turned that into very good. Detroit has turned that into very good on the precipice of great. But it took a lot of years of losing for those teams to get there. And even when you go through years of losing, it's not a guarantee that you're going to get to great. It worked for the Bengals, kind of working for the Lions, hasn't really worked for the Jaguars. So again, mixed results with tanking too. But teams are finding the value of very good to be greater than it was before. And I think Kirk Cousins has spent a decade putting that to use for himself, because he wins between 7 and 10 games every year and has a quarterback rating between 12th and 23rd every year with the Vikings. And that has produced a giant and illustrious career for Kirk Cousins. And so I'm interested to see how the value of very good begins to change as time goes along. We'll talk about this more another day, but I'm curious to see as we go along which teams that remain very good, like the Bucks and the Falcons, try to stay in that camp of very good, and how other teams in the AFC start to adjust. Maybe like the Colts. How do the Colts fight for very good as they bring back all of their remaining players? How do the Dolphins look to stay in that camp of very good? curious to see how some of these teams that are kind of in transition phases adapt and evolve. We'll see as time goes on. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in here to the Take It Easy podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode talking about NFL parity and some of the trends and dynamics around free agency this year. I felt like this was a long-form conversation that would be more engaging than talking about the day-to-day transactions that we've seen over the last 3 days. There are a lot of them. We could dive into some of them another day with some of our favorite friends of the podcast, but for now, this felt like a great way to kind of contextualize everything that went down with NFL free agency. Leave a 5-star review, downloads, any and all greatly, greatly appreciated. With your support, we continue to follow our dreams, and you guys are still supporting our dreams as you have continued to time and time again. We will talk to you guys either this weekend for a Wired Up. Stay tuned to the podcast feed. Might be another episode of Wired Up coming your way if a big NFL story breaks. Or if not, we'll talk to you on Monday after Selection Sunday is done in the men's tournament and as Selection Sunday is getting ready to take place, or Selection Monday is getting ready to take place in the women's tournament. Seedings that we will very much be keeping our eyes on as we go along. Have a great weekend, everybody, and as always, take it easy. Let's send you into that weekend, however and whenever you might be listening, with one of our favorite parody songs in the history of the show, the very good, the trying to be very good Atlanta Falcons, and their beautiful iteration of We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel. Harry Douglas, Arthur Blank, Dante Fowler, Michael Vick, Devin Hester, Hayden Hurst, and Caleb McGarry. Tack McKinley, Deion Sanders, Michael Turner, Grady Jarrett, Austin Hooper, Tevin Coleman, Tony Gonzalez. Warwick Dunn, Brent Grimes, Kyle Pitts, Des Chauvant, Leftwich, Julio, mascot has creepy eyes, Darren Hall and KZ, gambling Calvin Ridley, AJ Terrell, Duron Harmon, Russell Gage, Vic Beasley. We're the Atlanta Falcons. We're always flying and we keep on trying. We're the Atlanta Falcons. We keep blowing leads, but we try to fight it. Steven Jackson, Casey Hayward, Dan Quinn and Shanahan, Jake Matthews, Drake London, Fabian Moreau, Mike Davis, Ito Smith, Devonta Freeman's Pro Bowl, Jockeys Rogers, Asante Samuel, Young Way, Dean Pease, Mike Smith had a winning team, Henry Crockett, Petrino, Mariota, Netflix, Deion Jones, Tajay Sharp, Cordero Lizzo, running back, Chris Lindstrom, D'Angelo Hall, some dude named Zacchaeus. We're the Atlanta Falcons. We're always flying and we keep on trying. We're the Atlanta Falcons. We keep blowing leads, but we try to fight it. Dirty Bird, bring it back. Roddy White and Alex Mack. Alford, Luke McCown, Super Bowl prostitutes. Justin Hardy, Matt Schaub, Atlanta Braves baseball beat with an onside kick. Dirk Cutter's an idiot. Corey Peters, Richie Grant, Jesse Bates' contract, Bijan Mustard, Super Bowl's a no-go, Matty Ice's MVP, Mike Pinnell, Matt Hennessy, Dwight Freeney, Toy Lolo, don't score that ball, Todd Gurley. We're the Atlanta Falcons. We're always flying and we keep on trying. We're the Atlanta Falcons. We keep blowing leads, but we try to fight it.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.